大仙人家，或许说，就那个子，你那咱大仙人家现在，那什么钱，他们就同啊，在大仙人家设定啊，贡献的，让了给你接吧，让了接吧，咱接吧，越把的，嗯，现在什么钱的怕，嗯，就这话接的，但，但我得等俺们这个了，他这个是呢，说说里边的几个呀，他说说里边也不会，现在呢。
其他刚刚去那，其他身边没地方去用过了的，现在先要啊，对吧？是不？现在你接不接不接？然后就让你接吧，那接接不行吧？那行，第怕现在身边里边第几群了？身边了给你那也不穷了，身边第几群了就不接我三八的。但身边身边一到了，他叔叔也刚刚开始听那这，叔叔同学开始用过那，该接吧，民族三级的略大的，你过面的的。
你过面的大些，你们就过吧，大些你们就过吧，是不？现在你过，可是你过去这样子，你那个大些你们就，哎呀是，大概过那的，那你那样子的，那，那不嘛些，今天今天做，现在你什么大的呢？你什么钱？你们就，你这个电话就把的，中央面对把的，其他什么钱就电话的电话的，你这个中央的电话的，你这个，现在你，你过面的。 大型研究你就公布是不？你的呢？什么叫什么叫？同我那招啊？你请电话的电话的，你最近这里的你上些国防部头的，他们都就是上些国防部的最近是不？你上些多么？托把托把小三百呢？你上了这的大型研究国内讲究什么？公布啊？是的。那你过了我这样那样都是去呢？你就公布些什么？结结果嘞？是肯定的过去了。
Last week, we continued the presentation on equalizing and exchanging self with others. Now, remember when we spoke about what the actual meaning of this practice is, it means giving up the self-cherishing mind and rather cultivating the other-cherishing mind. So in a sense, one is exchanging the self-cherishing mind for the other cherishing mind. That is the essence of the practice. So here, one engages in the meditation, reflecting on how all sentient beings have been our mothers, reflecting their tremendous kindness, the wish to repay the kindness, etc. And then, with the understanding that all sentient beings, just like us, only want to experience happiness, want to be free from all problems and difficulties. When, with this mind of love that comes from this, one engages in the practice of giving all our happiness to others, giving in particular our roots of virtue, the seeds of future happiness, giving this to others. And we're doing so knowing that others are just like us in wanting to experience happiness, but they are only experiencing problems and difficulties and the like. And any kind of happiness they experience is only of a very temporary nature. It's unstable and unreliable. And they're experiencing no lasting happiness. So therefore, in our meditation, we give them all that they need so that their worldly or their temporary needs are fulfilled. But in particular, the virtue that we are accumulating and we have accumulated, we offer to them so that they may come to experience the ripening results, in particular meet the Dharma and cultivate virtue themselves. And likewise, one engages in a similar practice in terms of taking on the suffering of others. And here one generates a strength of mind that whatever problem I experience, I experience it on behalf of others. And by me experiencing it, may they not experience this difficulty. May I alone experience this difficulty. And we do this generating a strength that whatever problem or difficulty I experience, I can deal with this. Through the strength of this compassion that I'm generating, through the strength of this that comes from this mind wanting others to be free from all difficulties, through the strength of that mind, I know I can deal with all the problems and difficulties that I experience, and I do so on behalf of others. And then we take this meditation further, because now we've taken responsibility for alleviating others from suffering. And now we generate the second aspect of the mind of enlightenment, the mind of bodhicitta, and that is to be of true benefit, or rather to be of greatest benefit to others, to be a skilled guide. I need to become a Buddha. And then we generate the aspiration to continue practicing so as to become a Buddha for the benefit of others. So this is the way to meditate on equalizing and exchanging self for others. And this meditation is something we should engage in every single day. In this way we'll generate strong habituation to it, and the practice will be very effective in terms of developing bodhicitta. So we can start tonight in the middle page 228 with the third of the three subdivisions in the section, considering others more important than oneself. So we'll look at how to engage in this practice, what the benefits of this practice are, and this practice is presented through the explanation of how past masters themselves practiced.
Dinma chike chona chike lamga de mero chi kangbaro chiru gyene chiya gi dene mi jyo bena ta din ba mi ni ga ro go ro wa ro de ngandu ta ngandu samna kha ro sana so so dile tha ya da ta khoi jablo che ro na khoi jablo che ro na kangbo ngandu mo ji khoi jablo che ro ban do win se be samlo jyo ro har san so so thai go ro khoi kangbo chi na so so ma chi ba gyu me wa chung go ro samna dina chi wa ro wa da chi da ngandu dina chi wa re chi da ngandu di samna ji jeb jab che ma chi
그러니까
And what one is looking at in this third division here is to generate the mind of to see others as more important than oneself, to value others more than one currently values oneself. And this isn't the way we generally think. We generally put our needs before others, our wants before others, and we tend to help others only if it doesn't cost us anything or more than we are prepared to give. So. Here to make an analogy, if one, for example, if there is a fire before one and one has to cross this fire to get to safety, and it's you and someone else, then you know through walking through this flaming ground you'll certainly burn your feet. Here what we're trying to do is generate a mind that will spontaneously arise and say, well, if I burn my feet, it doesn't really matter. What's important is that I get the chance to carry this person through the fire, my companion, so that my companion can pass through these flames without any harm. And so what we're trying to generate is the thought of, my own problems and difficulties are not important. What is important is alleviating others from suffering. So between the two, my own difficulties really don't count for much. What is important is that I relieve others of pain and suffering. So this is what we are trying to generate here in this outline.
So Mishengi Kale, the position, Dupu and Chick, Yaya, Dedica. Sina do some power in the Dinis and Halaya, Chicksaya, Tunya, Sosu, Subu, Sosu, Lobjon, Shingo, Samatai, and each other. Shangi, the Shanga, didn't know your situations. Chesan Shen said that getting touch him huge Jesha, Chesan, Sosu, Digi, Duyata, Sosu, Kohatu, Chesan, Shangi, didn't know which is a Shandy, touch him Borishas, and they do some dumb courage.
When we self-analyze, when we look within ourselves, because selfish, the mind of self-cherishing is dominant, it dominates every thought and activity. And this is what we're trying to overcome in this practice, trying to overcome this selfish intent that's behind everything we do and exchange it for the mind of the other cherishing mind, the mind that genuinely sees others as being more important than oneself, that genuinely wants others to be happier, and more so than wanting happiness for oneself. And so the way we currently engage with the world is if we come into contact with something wonderful, someone gives us a great gift, we're very pleased for this. And we keep it for ourselves and we consider it ours and we're very happy about this. If it were if it was of such a great magnitude that it was more than we needed, then we would give to others and we probably would do so happily. But we make sure that we ourselves are looked after first. So and if we were, for example, somehow we are given a number of different precious metals, or precious substances, there's diamond, there's gold, there's silver, and some iron. So we'd see this array of gifts that we have been given, and we know that diamonds and gold are of great value, so we'd certainly keep that to ourselves, because we know if we sell this, we could do many things, and we'd be looked after. And then there's silver and the iron. Well, who needs iron when you've got these precious substances? So the iron we'd probably throw away, leave outside. And if someone takes it, it's fine. And then the silver, well, maybe we'll give to someone we care about, or maybe we'll keep this for ourselves as well. And that is generally how we think. When we have something of value, we make sure that we get the best of it. That's where we are first drawn, and that's where our energy goes. Make sure that we have the best. And if there's an abundance, if there's more than we need, well, then we will give to others and we'll help others. But not at our own expense. We put ourselves first in every way. We always make sure that we get sufficient. What we're now trying to do in this practice here is change this way of thinking, overcome this selfishness, and rather place others before oneself. So to do this practice and to give up this very ingrained way of thinking that cares for ourselves at the expense of others, before others, the practice is to first or to reflect over an extended period on the kindness of others. That this is the key meditation here, is repeatedly reflecting on the kindness of others. And it's only once that has been done sufficiently well so that the arisal of the wish to repay the kindness, of the arisal of the understanding of our dependence on others, only after that can one approach the position where we genuinely place the happiness of others before ourselves. The practice, as we know, we've heard about this before, is we think about the kindness of our parents of this life, and we reflect how this very body that we have now as an adult was dependent on causes coming together, such as our parents, and then in particular, the care that they showed us when we were so vulnerable. If it wasn't for that kindness, we would not be here now. So this is the starting point. And that is, it's quite easy to recall this kindness, but we need to use this as a starting point and expand it out. And because now that we are adults, it's very easy to take the kindness that our parents showed us a number of decades ago for granted. But still, we right now are dependent on the kindness of so many sentient beings. We don't weave our own fabric and make our own clothes, let alone grow all our own foods, etc. We are dependent on so many people. And if we think about this just in a little bit of detail, everything that we experience and we rely on is dependent on the kindness of others, from the roads that are constructed and the cars that are built, etc. All this is done by others. And all the material resources that we have and we enjoy, the only reason we can buy these is because we receive a salary, because of certain work we do. And that too is dependent on the kindness of others. And likewise with the food we eat, it's easy to think about the farmers and the people who sell to us, but there's the whole supply chain in between. And then in terms of food production, there are animals behind that, whether it's the insects fertilizing the pollinating the plants and the like. There is this whole process of beings seen and unseen by us upon whom we depend. So this is the meditation that we need to do really in quite some detail. We start with our parents, but we need to get to the point where we see each and every being as kind to us as our parents of this life. And if it wasn't for the kindness of others, we right now would not be able to survive. So this is the starting point for being able to truly see others as more precious as ourselves or than ourselves. We need to reflect on the kindness that all beings show us. So ourselves and all sentient beings, we desire happiness, and we only want to experience happiness. And everything we do, everything we say, everything we think is motivated by this wish to achieve happiness. And happiness comes about in dependence on the causes that we ourselves have accumulated. And those causes that we ourselves accumulated, we didn't accumulate them in a vacuum. We accumulated them independence on others. So when we're meditating on the kindness of others, we should also recall that all the happiness that we experience comes from causes that we ourselves have accumulated, and those causes were accumulated in dependence on the kindness of others. An example that's easy to understand: when we practice generosity, then being able to practice generosity is dependent on others. There needs to be someone who has needs that we can fulfill. Likewise, if we practice the generosity of giving Dharma, there need to be ordinary sentient beings who don't know about the Dharma, or who are not practicing properly, who are maybe engaging in non-virtue and the like. So our ability to practice the generosity of giving Dharma to others is also dependent on the kindness of others. And then an important reflection here is that those people that we don't like, that we don't get on with, that we'd rather not meet, those that we find their personalities difficult to get on with, to generate through being with them and trying to be kind to them and relate to them in a beneficial way, we practice patience in their presence. And through practicing patience, we know that we generate a lot of virtue, purify a lot of negativity. To be able to practice patience requires others. So therefore, our accumulation of virtue, the seeds of future happiness, are dependent on others. And not just those who are less fortunate than us, but those that we don't like and we don't get on with and that give us a hard time. These people, too, are tremendously kind to us when we think about it in detail. Furthermore, our attainment of all the goals that we desire on the Dharma path are dependent on others. So if we have the aspiration to develop the mind of calm abiding and experience the peace of calm abiding, or progress further and develop bodhicitta and the mind of definite emergence, realize emptiness and attain Buddhahood itself, all of that is dependent on the kindness of others. And so when we think about it in this way, of course we reflect on the kindness of our spiritual teachers, but we also rely on so many others, not just the spiritual teacher, whether it's our fellow students, whether it's those who produce the conditions, the variety of conditions that we require to be able to receive teachings, to be able to have the environment where we can reflect on the teachings, or the mental space where we can, or the lack of busyness where we can meditate and not have to engage in activities at all times. So therefore, when we think about the kindness of others, we need to go much further than just our parents and then the production of our food and all our material comforts and the like. We need to think about all the wealth that we have. This depends on others. The virtue that we've accumulated depends on others. Our attainment of all our spiritual goals, including enlightenment, is dependent on the kindness of others. So thinking like this again and again, the kindness of all sentient beings without exception becomes very apparent. Engaging in this meditation repeatedly, then the preciousness of others will become very apparent to us. And with this, this becoming apparent to us, the wish for them to experience only happiness will be very powerful within us. Then the mind of wanting them to experience happiness, taking responsibility for their happiness, this will arise in a powerful manner. And which will arise to the extent that I will engage in whatever activities are required to ensure that others achieve happiness. No matter what difficulties I need to experience so as to benefit others, I will endure those difficulties. I will put up with them. And I will not see them as difficulties or obstacles, but I will progress through them so as to be of benefit to others. And this mind will grow and develop so that we know that whatever obstacles we have, these we can overcome, even if it includes ending up being born in the lower realms in place of others. We will do this. So this strength of mind will come through practicing in this way. And in this way, we will exchange self for others. And what we will have exchanged here is the self-cherishing mind will have been exchanged for the other-cherishing mind. Rather than placing ourselves at the forefront of everything we do, achieving lasting happiness for others, this will be our primary motivation. So this is now the meaning of the practice of equalizing and exchanging self for others. We engage in the practice so as to firstly see the kindness of others, the preciousness of others, to the extent that we see their achievements of happiness, their liberation, their separation from suffering, as being more important than our own liberation from suffering. And with this understanding, we will then reprioritize our goals. And instead of striving for our own happiness, we will be striving to achieve the happiness of others. And therefore, every virtuous activity we will engage in will be motivated so as to achieve merit to give to others. And every problem and difficulty we encounter, we will see this compared to the goal of achieving the happiness of others as being insignificant. And with this understanding, we'll easily move through all the obstacles that we have on our path. And we'll progress through them, knowing that these obstacles are insignificant compared to this amazing goal before us. And that goal is liberating others from suffering, accumulating virtue, offering it to others. So therefore, we will go through a number of hardships to accumulate virtue, but with a joyous mind, because we'll know that these hardships aren't important. What's important is the goal, and the immediate goal is to accumulate virtue so as to offer it to the long-term goal, and the long-term goal is for others to achieve lasting happiness. So therefore, whatever problems we have and we do encounter, these we will see as insignificant and therefore easily be able to progress through, because we will value others as we value the goal of achieving others' happiness as more than the difficulties that come with practicing the Dharma path. So this is the meaning of equalizing and exchanging self for others.
Chepsan chosan gomgan dilragi du ta kanjele dunda dire sha ma je bene meni midile ko ingje pe kol ga de samda de no koro mogon ba ne ko yagi do ya kinyo ma da lewa jidan ko yagi do ya yo ma ma gon gon ko yagi do go da na je de chersa sul re go sin gon gon nyamlen chen koro la ra go re samyo koro no samda de chersa de janda ji go sam go de ine koro la ra go re
As we engage in this practice, then the preciousness of others will become more and more apparent to us, and the need to accomplish their welfare will become more and more dominant within our minds, within our motivation. And this then serves this important benefit, or has this important benefit, of that whatever obstacles we encounter when we're engaging in our practice, we will easily overcome these, because we will see them as insignificant, as of little importance compared to the goal. So therefore, if we have obstacles in practicing patience or practicing generosity, or when trying to meditate or trying to study and the like, we will easily overcome these, because we'll understand that through accumulating virtue, I can offer this to others. I can achieve this goal of repaying the kindness of others, and repaying the kindness not just of those that are kind to me right now, but those who have been kind to me throughout this life, and not just directly, but indirectly have shown me kindness, and not just throughout this life, but all lives since beginning this time. So in this way, we'll be able to progress through our obstacles on the Dharma path, and quickly attain the realizations on the Dharma path. So thinking like this, thinking primarily of others, actually, the benefit that one accumulates does come to oneself. So whilst one is striving sincerely to be of benefit to others and dedicating one's benefit sincerely, wholeheartedly for others, those the good karma that one's accumulated, the merit one has accumulated, ripens upon oneself. So therefore, if there's some doubt now when you're hearing this and thinking, but will I get any benefit from this practice? Absolutely. And where that benefit is experienced will be in one's own mental progression, one's own mental development. One will become a kinder person, a gentler person, a wiser person. So one will feel this difference and experience this difference within oneself. And all those around one will see that difference too and relate to you in a different way, because they'll know you for being a genuine person, a kind-hearted person, a person who will not take advantage of them, but is also always there for them. So in this way, you'll develop beneficial relationships with others through your own mental development. And in this way, you'll indirectly have a tremendously beneficial relationship on others. And all the while, you are progressing nearer and nearer and nearer to your own goals, whether they are the shorter-term goals, such as calm abiding and bodhicitta and definite emergence and the like, or the ultimate goal of Buddhahood. All of these approach through one's own development. So therefore, the direct beneficiary of this practice is actually you yourself. The indirect beneficiary will be others. Because the reality is, to attain enlightenment, one has to study and meditate. Without that, it doesn't happen. So therefore, as much as we strive to benefit others, we can only have an influence on them, but we cannot make someone do the required practice so as to attain enlightenment themselves. The person who is therefore directly benefiting from this practice is the practitioner themselves.
Jawa mungu shen du si kumbha res. Chiya shube naze de lama de sulemba res. Dene de chiri le de shude de lama de arara said ma dene gi chigan ma du sri so ma de chere. Jeso de misu like misu sam men shuje mangu ya disu da lama de ja san shi du chiri de shune ko arara la go ya kare ko naze ga tang ma ro ko da ko Jumashik to Tendua, did a Lamagi, contributed in some of the Lamadiki, Munshige, Hakoche, and Nalia Toshikoti, and Delia Nakucham, Maros, with Maul Chadiris, Tisna, Dinigi, Tiki, Lamigi, that she handed Tayu Wongi, Kitty, another Dangles and Petayu Wongi, and Nazi Kitty, Nazmaya, Lamadi, to Lemma, yes, Dinigi.
And now we've looked at how this practice works in some detail. So we'll turn to the text. And the text explains it through the presentation of stories recounting the deeds of practitioners in the past who had been training equalizing and exchanging self with others. So there's several stories recounted here of the Buddha himself in his previous lives before he attained enlightenment. But the first one we'll start with is about one of Atisha's teachers called Maitri Yogi. So this is a very famous story, a very well-known story about he was teaching one day and a student to the side of the teaching threw a stone at a dog and hit the dog and chased the dog away. And seeing this, Maitri Yogi, he fell off his throne crying out in pain and clutched his side. Now, Maitri Yogi was quite developed. He had clairvoyance. And through his clairvoyance, he could see that his students thought he was showing off. He was just pretending to take on the suffering of others, and he was being a bit dramatic. So through his clairvoyance, he knew that his students were generating not just doubt, but critical mind towards him. So with this understanding, he pulled up his donka, his shirt, and he showed them the swollen bruise from where the stone had struck the dog. So the stone struck the dog on the back, and so he showed them his own back. And there was the bruise, the swollen bruise from the stone. So from this, the students immediately understood that their teacher was an advanced practitioner, and it was through the power of his love that he was actually able to take on the suffering of that dog. This famous story shouldn't be taken literally, as is often the case. The meaning is a bit more hidden. So what the actual meaning here is that not that one can physically take on the suffering of others. One cannot take on, for example, someone else's illness and experience it oneself. Rather, the meaning here is that due to the power of he had developed such strong love for all others, just like a parent has for their child. So of course there was no such close relationship between this dog and the monk, but in the same way that a parent will do anything possible to protect their child from suffering, including putting themselves in harm's way, this is the power of love that he had for this other sentient being, this dog. So for example, if a child is in physical harm and maybe is being harmed, a parent without thinking will put his or her body between the harm and their child and will take the harm on physically themselves so as to protect their loved child. So this is the power of mind that was being displayed here in the story. The next story is about Dhammarakshita. So at one point he came across someone who was very ill, and the doctor said, there is a cure for your illness, but that cure is you have to eat the flesh of a living being. So Dhammarakshita, who was filled with compassion for this person who was suffering from a grave illness and who couldn't easily find the medicine that was required, he volunteered to give his own flesh. And he volunteered, this wish to give his own flesh arose spontaneously within him, thinking to himself that whatever pain I experience from cutting off my own flesh, this isn't important. What is important is that I alleviate others of suffering. So in this way, he cut off some flesh from his thigh and gave it to the patient to eat. And the patient ate this and was healed. And then he thanked Dhammarakshita for enduring such tremendous pain so that this stranger could be healed from an illness. And Dhammarakshita said, this really isn't important. What is important is that you are feeling better. And this brings great joy to my mind. The whatever discomfort that I experienced through cutting off my own flesh and giving this to you, this really is nothing compared to the joy that I experienced knowing that you now are healed and that you have been alleviated from the suffering. So again, the meaning of the story is to illustrate the power of his practice practice of the equalizing and exchanging self for others. In other words, how he valued the happiness of others at the expense of his own problems and difficulties.
Then you say nasbe dasa shazo la. Chinan di nilam na liya di mika obo di papa chenje si yi, papa chenje si yi korong liya ane jilam na cha yung hon na di dita ma liya si wala. Diga la sen korong niji gombe ki panyan di suenam di ki di tati nanda di niji korong shen rang liya shen jeba sen pa yana jisin ki suenam di ki suza ganga tepe na ganga di kyo hose tuku liya si wala donda di na wala.
So despite, so he had, you know, offered his flesh to the being had been healed, the stranger had been healed, and he was really joyful about this. He had no regret about having sacrificed his own well-being and his own well-being for the sake of others. Nevertheless, he had cut off a chunk of his own flesh, and of course this was days before anesthetic, so he was in some pain. And he struggled to fall asleep because of the severity of the pain. Nevertheless, his mind remained joyful about due to having fulfilled his innermost wish, and that wasn't his own happiness, but rather the happiness of others. Then eventually, in the small hours of the morning, he dozed off and had an auspicious dream. And in that dream, a large white being approached him. And spat on his hand and rubbed the spittle onto his wound, and his wound healed. Then Dharmakshita woke from his dream, and it turned out he had healed. So this, in this dream, he had actually seen Chandrasekhar, and Chandrasekhar had healed him. So again, the meaning of this story is that through engaging in activities that even when they do bring you harm, but they primarily are done, or they are solely done to benefit others, but as a side effect there are obstacles and difficulties for yourself, due to the virtue created by having a genuine motivation of compassion, a motivation where one is genuinely thinking of the welfare of others, through that virtue one overcomes all one's problems, one overcomes all difficulties. And that is represented or illustrated in this story by him healing due to the blessings of Chandrasekhar. So again, the meaning of this story is that through genuinely practicing with compassion, through the virtue that one accumulates, one will be able to overcome all obstacles in one's Dharma practice. The same meaning then is presented in another way, which says here at the end of the story that he was he had a realization of emptiness, and he came to know all the these texts by Nagarjuna on the five treatises on the middle way. So again, this shows the meaning here is that due to the tremendous virtue that was accumulated through practicing with genuine compassion, that realizations of emptiness and the like come about due to this virtue.
Then
Now we come to another story. This one is about one of the first of a few about the Buddha in a previous life, before he became a Buddha. In other words, when he was an ordinary being, a sentient being, he hadn't yet become a Buddha. So in this particular life, he was a king, and in his land there was an epidemic which was infecting many people. So he approached his doctors and said, "How can I heal my subjects from this epidemic, or how can my subjects be healed? I don't want them all to die." So they said, "The only thing that can heal them is the flesh of a particular fish. Other than that, the flesh of that fish is nothing that can heal them." So the king, motivated by compassion for his subjects, he, on an auspicious day, he made many offerings and the like, accumulated virtue and set a pure motivation, making prayers to the three jewels, that he's now going to take his own life, and may he be immediately reborn in a river within their kingdom as this fish that they require, that whose flesh they require, and of a sufficient size, etc. So with a pure motivation, he then took his life, and he was immediately born in accordance with his prayers as this particular fish, a Rohita fish. And this Rohita fish was able to call out in human voice to his subjects and say, "Here I am, come and eat me. I am the embodiment of your medicine." So they came and they ate the king, and as they ate the king, the fish magically healed, and so there was always enough flesh of the fish to go around to all the subjects. So anyway, they ate the fish and they healed. So everyone then was healed from this epidemic. And then the king, as the fish, in human voice, he said to his subjects, "I am your king. I gave up my life so as to save yours. Now I have a request of you. Please repay this act of generosity that I have made by committing to not engage in any non-virtue and only engage in
virtue. Subole kale kate nyana dinu seje shenle phembe samno gomtu gor jadi da shenyam ji gom gor es da tu shen da shenyam ji gom bar es te da shenyam ji gom na sum gor wa ran le shen je ba dinu gom je shen di ji ti yo da la la ran lu ti ke pa dor ni nya le je wa le so subole kon su sta chu bar es na kon su le ran le shen je ba din ba dinu gom bar es.
This is an illustration, of course, where the king, who later would become Buddha Shakyamuni, he had been practicing equalizing and exchanging self for others, and saw others, their need for happiness, as more important than his own. So he, of course, was the king, and he was experiencing all the joys of being a king. Yet he gave this up for the sake of others, and he gave it up willingly, without hesitation. So this shows the power of the practice that he had engaged in, where he valued that the others so much more than himself. He was able to give up all the comforts and happiness of a king for the sake of others, so that others could be healed and then encouraged to engage in virtue.
Nayama nyamnin chidu kapla jamba da nyiju gumdi da semjin dundro jkewe ne din tenla ya jamba da nyiju gumgor wa da dine da rubi jkewa le yadu ne jasu jina le ya mi tongba mi ngap je dusin ji kye je le yadu dine dusin di cha je chola to chola to dine rubi di ne le jine rubi di ke o da kyan ro cha san dine yi jablo gong lo shuyen shuas dine ngi pa jewa lap che ane rubi di jablo gong shuyen che an tu jasu talpa
계속 치료한
Then the penultimate story is also about the Buddha. So this this is a story about when he, in a lifetime previous to becoming a Buddha, he was born as an animal, in particular as a turtle. So this story is on page 231. So here, the Buddha had been reborn as a giant turtle, and a ship that was sailing by started to sink, and there were 500 humans on the ship, 500 merchants. So he called out to them in human voice and said, come to me and I'll take you to the shore. And so all these merchants climbed onto his back, and he took them to shore. So this must have been quite a journey, in that whilst he was big enough to carry 500 humans, obviously there was quite some weight that he wasn't accustomed to, and he eventually got them to the shore, but then he collapsed from exhaustion, so he had nearly killed himself for the benefit of others. And then he collapsed exhausted and passed out, and when he later came to and woke up, he then noticed his body, whilst he'd been passed out, is now covered by insects, and these were blood-sucking insects. So they were eating his body. So now the king, the tortoise is still exhausted, but now it's faced with a dilemma: what to do. If he even just rolls over, he will kill all these thousands of insects. Let alone if he goes into the ocean and continues with his life, he will certainly kill all of these insects. So, despite almost losing his life so as to help those humans, he now sacrificed his life so as not to harm these 80,000 insects who were drinking his blood. Rather, he gave up his life so that they could be sustained. So again, the stories maybe should necessarily be taken literally. The meaning again is, though, that through the power of practicing equalizing and exchanging self for others, even the habit of thinking in this way will ripen in future lifetimes, and one will naturally be there for others, naturally put the happiness of others before oneself. And furthermore, one will have cultivated the attitude that my own happiness is not particularly important. The happiness of others is. And whatever difficulties that I need to endure, I will endure these for the sake of others. And we see that here in this illustration, where the being in this life as a turtle was prepared to give up their life for the sake of others. So in other words, no matter how large the problems were, these were not insurmountable because of the goal of being of benefit to others, of achieving the happiness of others.
So now we, in the middle of page 231, it starts a longer story. So here, in a previous lifetime, the being who would become the Buddha was born as a prince, and he had a protuberance on his crown, yes. And so, and from this, it was like an elixir, so it could transform gold, iron and the like into gold. So, and as for this, he was given the name Jewel Crest. Anyway, so he was born as this prince, and he also had a magnificent elephant called, Excellent Mountain. And later on, when he had grown up, he was given a wife by a Risi, a religious practitioner, gave him his daughter as his wife, and they had a son together. Anyway, then one day, he had a great feast, and he invited
everyone to come to this feast, and he invited everyone with the understanding of, I will give you everything that your heart desires, I will give to you. So I'm sure that this bread was delicious. But one of the beings who came was actually the god Indra. And Indra had heard about this king, the king called Jewel Crest, that he was particularly compassionate and generous. But he had heard about his reputation, but he had some doubt. So he thought, well, I will put the supposed generosity and compassion of the king to the test. And so he came out of the what we call Faipuja, or the Kari, they call it something else here. Anyway, like a Faipuja, out of the big fire, Indra appeared, but in the form of a cannibal, Varaksha. So he appeared in this form of a cannibal, and he approached the king and said, feed me what I desire. And the king offered all these delicious foods which were surrounding, but being a cannibal, in the form of a cannibal, then he said, this is not what I want. What I actually want to eat is the flesh and blood of a living being. And so now, of course, the king had thought, I want to help this being. I want to fulfill the wishes of this being before me. I want to give him exactly what he wants, to bring him happiness. I don't want him to be disappointed and let down and have his hopes unfulfilled. However, I'm not going to do that and create non-virtue. So I'm not going to kill the being. And what he's demanding is the flesh and blood of a being. And I'm not going to kill another. So then, the only thing I can do is give myself, give my own body, give my own blood. So with this in mind, he gave some of his own flesh, and he opened one of his veins and gave his own blood and his own flesh to the cannibal. After giving his blood and his flesh to the cannibal, then the cannibal transformed into Indra, and Indra said, don't worry, you don't need to give me any more. I am the god Indra. I have no need for to eat your flesh and drink your blood. But I wanted to see if you are who everyone says you are. And I now see that you are genuinely compassionate. You genuinely put the needs of others before yourself, without thinking about yourself. You genuinely are concerned for the welfare of others. What can I do for you? And he asked rhetorically, and then, Kelly, what's his nature? And then he took some ambrosia and rubbed it onto the wound of the king, and the king, of course, healed and became just like he was before. And so Indra was now impressed with the genuine compassion of the king. And then, so the feast came to an end, and then the king gave his elephant, this very famous elephant, to one of his ministers.
Tuba
So, of course, the story thus far, the story like the others, it's not to be taken literally, but it's more figurative. So what we should see very clearly from here is that in this story, the Buddha is not a Buddha. He's an ordinary being. He's a, like we are. He's not enlightened. However, we know he became enlightened. And how did he do so? Through practicing the Buddha Dharma, through cultivating his mind. And he cultivated his mind through practices such as equalizing and exchanging self as others. He practiced through developing the mind of compassion, where the achievement of the happiness of others was his primary goal. So through practicing in this way, he was eventually able to attain the state of Buddhahood. So we, as beings who desire Buddhahood ourselves, we should practice in the same way as he did. And in the story, we can see how, the results of his practice. So we'll end here then for tonight. So, of course, we spoke again about the practice of equalizing and exchanging self for others. So here, this practice, as I said at the beginning of the evening, the benefit of this practice directly comes to us, because this is how karma works, this is how dependence arising works. If you create the whatever causes we create, we ourselves will experience. So
This is the reality of this practice. The causes one creates, one experiences. So this is the direct outcome of the practice. However, when one engages in this practice, this should not be one's motivation, and one should guard against such a motivation arising. Because this practice is a meditation, it's done in meditation. We need to be engaging in this meditation honestly and sincerely with ourselves. We're not trying to deceive ourselves. We should guard against these veils of the afflictions. Rather, we should be open and clear with ourselves that this is not a practice that should be giving rise to pride and the like, but rather we should be engaging sincerely for the welfare of others. Not thinking about reputation, not thinking about progress on the path, because this will not come if this practice is not sincere. The arrival of compassion will only come from a sincere wish to be of benefit to others, not a fake wish, not a wish that is concerned about progress on the path or about renown amongst others. So, to give rise to the actual mind, where we have exchanged our self-cherishing mind for the other cherishing mind, this is independence on meditating on the kindness of others. We spoke about this at the beginning of the evening, how we need to progress this meditation out beyond just the obvious people, such as our parents, and then to our loved ones and those that we know that help us and the like, but to progress further and further, expand that field until we include each and every sentient being, seeing how they all directly and indirectly help us throughout this life and previous lives. And do this meditation again and again and again, so that the wish for their happiness arises very strongly within us. The wish for them to be freed from all suffering arises very strongly within us. And we keep engaging in this practice until our perspective changes. Our perspective changes, seeing that their happiness is more important than ours. Their freedom from suffering is more important than ours. And we keep engaging in this practice so that we come to see that whatever problems that we encounter in our endeavor to free others from suffering, these aren't important. They are to be expected and worked through. Because what is important is freeing others from suffering, helping others. We have behind us the power of the Dharma, the power of the Dharma minds within us. Others do not have this. So therefore they are reliant on us striving for their welfare. We should continue with this practice so that we start to see others as more and more precious. And so eventually we see them as more precious than ourselves. And this then is, this mind should arise in a genuine manner. And this is genuinely the exchanging of self for others. This isn't contrived, this is authentic. And here, when such a mind arises, one will gladly engage in any activity for the welfare of others, be it a small activity or a great activity. One will always be focused on trying to achieve the welfare of others. And with such a motivation, obstacles are easily overcome, because we are solely focused on achieving the lasting welfare of others. With such a mind then, we have given rise to the thought of, I take responsibility for others achieving lasting happiness. I take responsibility for others to be freed from suffering completely. So this is, of course, the first aspect of the mind of bodhicitta. And then, with our wisdom, we know that to be of real benefit to others, we have to be skillful. And the most skillful being is a Buddha. And therefore, so as to fulfill our aspiration, we will strive for the attainment of Buddhahood and overcome all the difficulties to attain Buddhahood. Why? So as to fulfill this motivation of achieving the happiness of others. So this is how we will give rise to the mind of bodhicitta, the actual, genuine mind of bodhicitta. And tonight we've heard not just how to go in this practice, how to engage in this practice, but we've seen examples and heard about examples of others who have engaged in this practice, and it went on to in the practice to eventually become the Buddha themselves. So we should take this as an inspiration to engage in this practice and do so every day over a sustained period, knowing with confidence that a change will come within us. So we'll continue from this page 232, if I'm not mistaken, next time. So we'll complete, there's not much left, we'll complete the story and then continue with the text. Can you see it again? So, if there's some questions, then please do ask. Then thank you, and until next week.
Yeah. Jesus, God, the Lord, God, God, God.